Good evening. Man, what a good crowd tonight. You must was expecting somebody else. But thank you so much for being here tonight. So hopefully I don't disappoint. It's good to see the audience that we have here with us. And thank you so much for coming our way. It's good to see Tony and his family. It's good to see Trenton and his family. It's good to see Kathy and Les. Yeah, I see you back here. So, but it's good to see everybody here tonight. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And I hope the things I say here tonight will be encouraging and edifying to you. I hope you'll get some benefit out of this. It bears repeating. It's going to be something out of the Old Testament prophecies. And I hope that you'll enjoy this. And I hope you'll be edified. And I also thank my wife for driving me here. So, she has been very lovey-dovey to me today, so I pressed my luck and say, would you come up here tonight and drive me? So, but I am very thankful that she has taken her time from getting all these phone calls from her family and me, and she hasn't had a chance to rest this afternoon, but she wanted to come up here, and it was well rewarded because she wanted to see the kids, so, and she got it, so... I hope you enjoy this, and I hope that you'll be encouraged by this message tonight. And tonight is about the things that has been written in the book of Amos. And the reason why I put a bullseye up here in particular is because if you read the first chapter and a little bit of the second chapter of Amos, you see that there is talked about all the people that is surrounding Israel and Judah. And because of that, you see all these horrible things that these nations have done, and then it comes to really center focus, because he tells us he's going to condemn Israel, and he goes through all these other places, and then he just right smack dab to Israel and tell them how bad they are as well. And it seems like the greater condemnation is through Israel. He comes from Judah. He comes up and he tells King Jeroboam and his people about what bad of a situation they're in and how they need to fix the things that they need to do. And what I want to get here tonight is just some of the things that we need to look at here in the book of Amos and ask ourselves, how does that reflect to you and I? What's the significance that we have Amos here as this prophet, and what can we get out of this in the book of Amos? And one of the things I want us to look at first and foremost is what we find here in chapter 7. Yeah, I'm kind of skipping a lot to get to this one little point here. But it's a very significant point. It's kind of reiterated in the first verse. But Amos really kind of tells Amaziah, who is Jeroboam's priest, why he is here telling this message of condemnation to the people of Israel. And you see that Amaziah has heard about the things that he has said about Jeroboam, the things that he has said about Israel, and he's telling him, he goes, O seer, go flee away to the land of Judah and eat bread there and prophesy there, but never again prophesy at Bethel. And the reason why he says that is because King Jeroboam was a very corrupt individual, and because of his sin, many people will pay for his actions. Maybe if you recall back in the book of Kings, where he decides to change everything when it came to worshiping God. He changed where to worship. He changed what to worship. He changed who was in charge of carrying on the worship. And he also even changed the times of worship. And he thought because he would do this, that he would get great recognition for it. And he did. And unfortunately, it wasn't the recognition that he needed. Because of what he does, so many other ancestors after him will pay for his sins. Because if you read there in Kings and you read in some of the other passages in the Old Testament, you see that the sins of Jeroboam was unlike any other king. Even when Josiah has done these great things, he will still pay for what Jeroboam has done. And he tells him here, he says, don't come back here again to Bethel. It is the king's sanctuary and it is the temple of the kingdom. Then Amos answered and said to Amaziah, he goes, I was no prophet, nor a prophet's son, but I was a herdsman and a dresser of sycamore figs. And what he's trying to tell him here is like, I didn't go to prophecy school, and I'm not from any lineage of prophets here. I was told by God to come and tell you this message. And what he says next is even more harsh. Jeroboam is not going to live. And the children of Jeroboam is going to pay dearly for his actions. And what I want to get out of this here, brethren, is we think to ourselves, we are so insignificant when it comes to our to what we could do when it comes to spreading the message of Jesus Christ. We say to ourselves, because I'm a mother with young children, therefore I can't do anything. That is not true. We say to ourselves, I am an older individual and I'm retired and all my kids have moved away and it's just me and my wife, or it's just me, and therefore I cannot bring any factor when it comes to the kingdom or its church. That's not true either. And we say to ourselves, because we're young and we're novice and maybe we don't have the experience like other individuals, and we say to ourselves, I can't bring anything to the kingdom of heaven. That's not true either. And once again, we are emphasizing how important it is when it comes to you and this work at this congregation. When it comes to the work and trying to promote the gospel of Jesus Christ, when you're here or when you're out there. But you need to know that you have a significant factor when it comes to the gospel of Christ. I don't know very many people. Maybe there are some out there. I guess I just wasn't one of them. But there is a lot of people out there that has never been converted by what the preacher has said in the pulpit. There has been a lot of people that decided to take the next steps in the baptism of Christ because of what the preacher said in the pulpit. It's not because he's not doing his job. I hope he's doing his job. But the thing is, there's some kind of influence out there that started all of this. Maybe it was a conversation at work. Maybe it was a girl or a guy you really liked. Maybe it was a classmate. Maybe it was a coworker. Whatever the case may be, there has been some conversation that has started. And what we understand here is this average guy has the audacity to come to this northern kingdom that is successful but also fallen in idolatry and tell them they need to get their act straight. Don't sell yourself short when it comes to promoting the gospel of Jesus Christ. Another thing I want us to get here tonight too is this: we see this horrible things that have been done by Israel's enemies. And just go along there, if you will, in chapter 1. You look here at Damascus, and you see that they talk about the violence that these individuals have. And one of the things that comes out is the threshing sledges, or the threshing hammers. And if you ever take the opportunity to look up and see what this is, it looks like a board with a bunch of rocks on it. But the thing is that is talked about there in the book of Amos is they're using that to kill people. It's not swords and shields. It's not weapons that they're using. They're killing people with just regular harvesting tools. And the individuals that are killing them are not soldiers. They're not militant men. They're farmers. It shows you that these individuals are violent people. And they're willing to use anything to kill the people of Israel. And he tells us here, he goes, there's three transgressions of Damascus, and four I will not turn away the punishment thereof. They didn't just do three sins, folks. If you understand when he talks about three transgressions, it's like you've done so many. You haven't done just a few. You haven't done just three here. The sign is to tell us that they have done many sins. And he tells us that fourth time, after the fourth time, signifies that there's no turning back from the punishment now. You have set yourself in for a beating. And Damascus has been condemned because of their violence. You go and look at Gaza in verses 6 and 8, and it talks about their slavery here. And what's really tragic in society today, we see this argument about how the slavery in the 17th and 18th century can be paralleled in the book of Exodus. I disagree with that, because I don't think they understand when it comes to the slavery in the 17th and 18th century is not a direct lineage to the thing that was done in the book of Exodus. However, when you look here in the book of Amos in this chapter, you do see a direct contact when it comes to the 17th and 18th century slavery in the United States. Because these individuals did not use, they use these people as commodity. They use them as for like some kind of use for purchase. And that's where you see kind of sad thing here, is they're using people not really because they have a spiritual, physical value. They look at him as some kind of value to pay for something. And once again, we see here in these verses that they condemn them for it, and they're not going to take the punishment back from them. And then when you go into Tyre was doing kind of the same thing too. But what is really sad here is they had a promise. They had a covenant between Tyre and Israel. It was between King Solomon and King Hiram of Tyre. And these individuals made an agreement, when Israel came up to Tyre, they'll be able to go through, no problems, no issues, no struggles whatsoever. And when Tyre came down through Israel, there was not going to be those issues as well. Well, somebody broke that promise. And they forgot about it. They went back on their word and they did horrible things to the people of Israel once again. And once again, they're condemned for this. And their punishment is not going to be revoked. And then when you look at Edom. And Edom was kind of, as one translation put it, they was like tearing away Israel like a wild animal. They showed no pity. They were relentless. And they showed no mercy to the people of Israel. When they did something to them, they made sure they was going to pay. And they didn't let up. And one of the things we'll find out through our studies here when it comes to Edom, God reminds us that they shouldn't have any business dealing with Edom. That was going to be God's part, not theirs. And then when you go to Ammon, Ammon did some horrific things when it came to pregnant women. And all for the selfish fact that it was going to help them increase their border. It was the idea that if they don't have children, then we'll have more around our area. We will have more things to possess. We'll have more land. We'll have more things. We won't be crowded out. So therefore, let's do some kind of horrific birth control, if you will, and tear these children away from their mother's womb. And once again, their sins was many. And God's not going to revoke the punishment on them either. And then we go to Moab. And Moab had this kind of idea of vengeance. Maybe we have heard the phrase, we don't get mad, we get even. Brethren, I don't know anybody has ever taken the notion when it comes to getting mad, they get even. They get better. What I mean by that is, if somebody takes out my leg, I'm going to take out both of theirs. If somebody is going to gouge out my eye, I'm going to make sure I gouge out both of them. We've never been a society to say that we're going to try to even the score. No, we try to one-up the score. And that's what Moab did when it came to this king. They annihilated him. They didn't think he needed a burial. They didn't think he needed anything. And they made sure when this king died, there was nothing left of him. Now, I want you to consider all the individuals we talked about here. And we look at these things that has happened. We say to ourselves, they were very horrible people. And what they did was wrong. And it's very evident what they did is wrong. Now, let me consider this. Now, look at Israel. Look at Judah. And Judah's not tearing people out of the womb, and they're not tearing out, or they're not showing some unrelentless vengeance either. They're not showing these things that we see through here with these certain areas. No, we see that they are horrible people, and the reason being, above all, is because they know better. Remember when we look back to Hosea, and we see that people were destroyed for their lack of knowledge? And we say to ourselves, well, they just didn't know God. No, they knew God. And maybe we say to ourselves, well, they didn't know enough of God. No, they knew enough of God. The thing is that they are not willing to know of God. Know of his mercy, know of his compassion, know of his forgiveness, know of his power. Know of the things that he is going to do, and it's not very far away for them to be punished for it. They don't know that. And here these individuals, these people specifically in Israel, they're told here, because you trample the head of the poor into the dust of the earth and turn aside the way of the afflicted. A man and his father go into the same girl so that my holy name is profaned. And they lay themselves down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge and in the house of their God, and they drink the wine of those who have been fined. And you see that they have been told the same thing. Your transgressions are many, and I won't revoke the punishment either. Do you notice when it comes to King Josiah, there is no king like him when it comes to righteousness? Of the things he has done, the tearing down of the idolatry, the kicking out his mom because she wanted to still follow in the pagan practices. And he says, no, you're not a part of the kingdom because this is supposed to be God's kingdom here. And no matter what Josiah has done, and no matter what righteousness has done, God says, no, you still have to pay for this. Because of the sins of Jeroboam. I asked the congregation, I do Bible study back at Merrill's Ridge. I said, what do you think is the biggest problem in the church today? What do you think it is? You know what they said? Hypocrisy. All right. That is the biggest problem in the church. And the thing is, it's not because we don't detest abortion. It's not because we don't detest the idea of homosexuality creeping in the church. It's not because we detest these things that 30 years ago we say that was an abomination. It's still an abomination now. It's not that. It's the things that we know that we shouldn't be doing, and we still do it. One man, a friend of mine, we was in this conversation on the way to do something, and he was telling me about the struggle he had with this one lady. He says, you know, she says that she will never, ever step foot in a church again. And he says, I don't know how to get her out of that mindset that the church is evil. I said, well, let me ask you something. If I name such and such a church, I said, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? He named off two people. I said, what's your view on those two people? Was it good? I said, there's the first problem. When we look at Christ Church, we think it belongs to somebody else. It doesn't, brethren. Something has happened where we got this notion that certain congregations belong to certain people. It is Christ Church. And usually what has happened is we've never taken the opportunity to confront the hypocrisy, or we say the hypocrisy is so hard to deal with, we just overlook it. Oh, they're just older generation that have set strong feelings, and therefore we just don't want to do anything about it. Brethren, you would not give me that kind of excuse standing up here. Oh, they're very young and naive. Well, you're never going to be able to teach them anything if you give that kind of excuse for someone. Because hypocrisy is also the weakest excuse that we see people don't come and worship God. And it's a canker sore. And the reason it's a canker sore is because instead of trying to do something to get rid of the problem, we just let it fester until it gets so bad that the damage is irreparable. Brethren, the enemy's problems are very evident. And I have no doubt in my mind, when we talk about certain topics, you would say to yourself, yep, don't like that either. I don't like murder. I don't like sexual immorality. I don't like this or that. But let's go into some finer things and ask ourselves, how well do we do this? A friend of mine, a preacher friend of mine, we was at a softball meeting. He says, hey, Jay, he goes, I want to show you some of these 8 things that we could be guilty of. And it's just all these characteristics that we have that we could be guilty of. And I started looking through it. He says, you got to be honest, Jay. He goes, ask yourself, has anybody ever accused you of doing one of these characteristics? 80 of them. After I did it, you know how many I didn't do? 80 whether I was doing the right thing or not, I have been guilty. Brethren, don't think for a second that you cannot fall in that same trap. Because if you look, he tells us, when it comes to the plumb line, I know a lot of us are carpenters here. A lot of individuals are carpenters here. You know what a plumb line is. You know, you put that down and you make sure that that thing better line up with that plumb line. Because if it doesn't, you got problems because you can't ignore the plumb line. And the plumb line, guess what? It never lies. Gravity won't wet it. But if you are even as much as a hair of an inch off the plumb line, the whole house is in danger. The whole building is in danger because it is not truly plumb. That means it's not truly straight. And that means if something comes along and it collapses to one side or the other, you got problems because you never made sure that was straight. You didn't make sure that was plumb. And he tells us here, God says, he goes, he stood by a wall with a plumb line in his hand. The wall had been marked with a plumb line. And he said to Amos, he says, what do you see? He says, a plumb line. He says, see, I will put a plumb line among my people in Israel. And I will not let their crooked ways pass inspection anymore. He's trying to remind you and I, because, brethren, we all have the Word of God. I'd be shocked that no one here tonight has access to the Bible. And we all know that there's things that is right and there's wrong. You know, Patience told me a story about Iris, how Iris just took a book just for just a few minutes and she came back and she gave the book and could tell her, I shouldn't be reading this. How old is Iris? 9. Once again, we need to be mindful that this word that we have been given, we don't have to be 9 years old to understand it. We understand, brethren, that there's a variety of sin out there that you and I know that we are doing, and it is wrong. Oh, yeah, you probably have never murdered anybody. Yeah, that goes to my next point. Yeah, he talks about here, he goes, whoever keeps the whole law but still fails in one point has become accountable for all of it. He says, but for he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not murder. If you do not commit adultery, but you do murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. And what he tells us here, it's really easy to kind of just say, I've never done murder. I've never done adultery. I've never done a divorce. I've never done this or that. We say to ourselves, we've never done any of the stuff that our society says that it is hard to say that it's nothing less than sin. But brethren, how about the fine stuff? What about gossip? Everybody's guilty of it. And it's not because it's for the weak-minded. It's because it's always out there. And it just comes as quick as that. You may not ever want to commit murder, but I can promise you that there's probably been times that somebody has done something to you that has hurt your feelings, that has upset you to a point where you have least anger, maybe even a little bit of it. Maybe you've never committed adultery, but fellas, don't take the double look of a woman that just walked by you that's dressed immoral and say to yourself, I don't need to look, have another look. And brethren, that's easy too. Don't sit here and tell ourselves, you know, I could overcome the hard stuff. Brethren, the hard stuff is the minor stuff. Think about even when we act up, think about how sometimes it's just careless. That's why James tells us here in his epistle, be careful what you say. Be careful what you wear. Be careful how you interact with someone. Amos tells us that there's an opportunity for you and I to fill a river that is empty. Fill it with righteousness. I am still amazed when we come to ourselves and we say that when it comes to doing good things in this world, we say to ourselves, there's not a lot to do. If you follow me on social media, you know I've been looking for a woman without a windshield. I found her, still without a windshield. I found her when I was dropping the mail off at my office. And I went over across the street, and I kind of just stood there to see where she's at. She's not in her car, but I just waited there to see where she's at. And she didn't show up. So I was over at a sports card shop, and I said, hey, I said, do you got something I could write on? And I wrote this message to her. I said, hey, you need to call me. You need a windshield. Here's my phone number. I put it in her car. It was easy to get into. Five minutes later, she calls me. She goes, you told me to call you? I was like, yes. I said, you need a windshield. Why don't you have a windshield? She says she got into it with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend had an ex-wife, and they end up busting her windshield because they accused her of still having a relationship with her ex-husband. And she tried two times to put a windshield in by herself and failed both times. I was like, let's go down to Murray's Glass. It's there on Front Street. I said, you know where it's at? Yes. So we went down there, and I said, when can you do this? And the lady looked at her schedule, and the installer was in there too. And I really liked the installer because of what he said next. She said, we could do this on Monday. And he said, no, we can do it noon tomorrow. And we got this windshield put in. But here's the thing, though, brethren. She asked, she goes, let me know how much I could pay you back. I said, you don't have to pay me anything. I said, you just need a windshield. Brethren, I think that's sometimes what we miss out on God. Because we need things in our life. We need peace of mind. We need comfort. We need joy. We need these things in our life. And we go through some crazy lengths to find that. And God is telling you, I'm right here. And you don't have to pay for it. Because I will be willing to give it to you. And the thing is, this is not the first time, as we've been studying, this is not the first time God has reached out his hand to the people of Israel and say, come back. You don't need anything. You just need me. There's so many things out there that promise you content and happiness and wealth and riches and land and all these things that you think that this is really what you need. And you see here in Amos, he says, no, you need me. But you also need to be a river that fills up an empty bank. It's not hard to do righteousness, brethren. It's not expensive to do righteousness, brethren. It's not time-consuming to do righteousness, brethren. It's incredibly rewarding to do righteousness, brethren. And that's the thing about Amos. He is telling you, you have this opportunity. But you're missing out because you think that these things matter. Look, if you will, in Matthew chapter 23. In Matthew chapter 23, verse 23, he tells us here, he goes, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You tithe mint, dill, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law." And the reason why I put these pictures up here is because you know that these are small, little, intricate things. And to take 10% of that is not an easy task to do. But they do it, and they do a very good job at it. It's impressive that they make sure, even when it comes to these small things that are not really worth a lot, they make sure they get it. And he's not condemning them for it. What he's condemning them for is, you have taken this extreme to do this. But when it comes to the other things of justice and mercy and faithfulness, you have neglected those things. You need to kind of look at this thing that's going on in our world today. It seems like when we talk about social injustice, it seems like it's just kind of a new thing. No, it's not. It's happening to them right now, or it's happening to them in the book of Amos. It's happening right now. And we say to ourselves, because we're just one person, we don't mean anything. And the tragedy is, there's so many people that believe that one person doesn't matter. Until they just decide to start doing it. And get their hands dirty. And try to do these things. When it comes to mercy, I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you about Tracy's dad. I think we were dating at the time. One time when we was at their house, we decided to get in a snowball fight. And I hit Jim in the head. And I'm not talking about one of those little fluffy white little snowballs. I'm talking about one of those ones like you take out of a snow cone. And I hit him in the head with it. And I thought, he's going to kill me. But he kind of sneered a little bit and walked inside the house. Mercy. Brother, I don't know about you, but there's probably been some times that you have brethren here, even in this audience tonight, that has probably said or done something that, like Jim, just kind of sneered. Because that hurt. Did you get over it? They're still your brethren. Imagine, if you would, that some of the people in this world today that do a lot of good gave up on the first time somebody did them wrong. We talk about how horrible this government can be. We talk about how horrible some of the things we see in society is. We talk a lot. That's all it is. It's just talk. I told an individual one time, she complained about, she thought that the voting system is corrupted. And I told her, I said, well, from my point of view as being a voting clerk, I said, I'll tell you the process that we go through. And I also invited her, because the average age of a voting clerk is anywhere probably between 65 and 85. And I told her, I said, if you really like to try this out, we'd really love to have you. because we need people. And sometimes that's not an easy job. I never heard from her. But there is a lot of things we can do out there, brethren, that we don't realize that we are capable of doing. And once again, as we said at the very beginning, don't sell yourself short because blank. Finally, Amos chapter 9. For those that get frustrated at hypocrisy and say to themselves that I'll never be a Christian because of that individual, it's reminded here that they're going to get their just desserts. It also reminds us, too, that just because that individual has practiced this hypocrisy does not mean there's an excuse for you. It says, behold, the eyes of the Lord God are upon a sinful kingdom, and I will utterly destroy it from off the face of the earth, saving I will not utterly destroy the house of Jacob, saith the Lord. He says, for lo, I will command, and I will sift the house of Israel among the nations, like as corn is sifted into a seed, yet shall not the least grain fall upon the earth. All the sinners of my people shall die by the sword, which say, the evil shall not overtake nor prevent us. Brethren, we do live in a very wicked world. Yeah, there is a lot of tragedy, and there's a lot of heartache, and there's a lot of difficulties that we all go through. But may I encourage you, though, just like as we're reminded here, every prophecy comes at this end to remind us God is still here for you. Jeremiah does it, Ezekiel does it, Daniel does it, Amos does it. It reminds that there is this judgment coming for everything that is evil. There is judgment coming for everything that is good. There is great things coming for those who wait upon the Lord. There is very horrible things that happen to those who are not willing to follow God at all. There's also horrible things that happen to people that know that there's a punishment coming and still does not do the right thing. But he's still there. He's here for you tonight. Why do we do an invitation? And it seems like it bears repeating every time we do this invitation. When we talk about baptism, and we talk about repentance, and we talk about prayer. And the reason being is very clear. It's because we see that when it comes to individuals that realize they've done something wrong in Acts chapter 2, they were pricked in the heart and says, what shall we do? Peter says, repent and baptize every one of you for the remission of sins, and ye shall receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. Remind you once again that these tragic things are going to happen, but God tells us, and Jesus tells us also, the very sad thing is the individual who is not willing to repent, is not willing to change. Even though they're aware of all the things that are coming, even though they may not be aware of the things that are coming, no matter what the situation is, if you are in sin, you need to change. And that's available for you here tonight. And brethren, let's not forget about prayer. Many times, we need to use prayer. There's a couple guys that I see every Sunday morning at the gas station at Marathon in Williamstown. One just had his shoulder done, and I see him. I talk to him about his grandson all the time. Another one that I would see sometimes on the weekdays, too, I noticed that he has this big old lump on the side of his throat. I came to find out why today. He's battling cancer. So once again, I wrote my phone number down, told him my name. We don't even know each other's name. I said, you call me if you need anything. And I said, I'll be praying for you. And I know we think that that statement, we'll be praying for you, is such an insignificant statement, but not the one who needs the Lord right now. So if you need to respond to this call, the opportunity is available for you here right now. If you need to respond, won't you come while we stand, while we sing?